Diary of the Urban Farmers. My name is Jim, and joining me is fellow self-sufficient enthusiast, Joel. The Urban Farmers was set up as a way that Joel and I could document and share our experiences during a time where we're shifting our way of life towards more self-sufficient lifestyle, and hopefully entertain and engage the community and the people of a like mind. Now, we don't claim to know it all. On the contrary, we hope to share our failures as well as our successes and encourage feedback from the community and have you share your experiences with the show. And with that, I'll give you all our contact details so you can give us a shout and hopefully we can share your thoughts, questions and comments with other listeners on the show. You can visit us at our website, theurbanfarmers.tv, and you can send in your questions or comments to our email, info@theurbanfarmers.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at UrbanFarmersTV, or you can jump over to our Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/TheUrbanFarmers, or you can jump over and subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is YouTube.com/TheUrbanFarmersTV, where we regularly update with new videos, giving you a visual insight into what we're doing. Now, it's important to note that whilst there's a lot of information, shows and inspiration out there around dropping the city life and moving to the country lifestyle, there wasn't really much in the way of promoting and giving guidance on self-sufficient living in a common urban household. And really, that's something that we felt was important to us, because we don't have the luxury of moving out to the country. Joel, when you were a kid, you had a bit of land when you were growing up. What was it like? You're in a pretty fortunate situation because you had a bit of land, but yet you're still in an urban situation that was close to the city and close to many utilities. I mean, how was that for you growing up?
Yeah, I feel really lucky with how it was, actually, Jim. We had 3.5 acres, but we were surrounded by probably 300 or 400 acres of bushland where we happened to be. It's all changed now, obviously. But yeah, it was a fantastic feeling. I think my father had plans of doing a bit more with the land that we had, which didn't eventuate. But I got a real appreciation for having a bit of land and a bit of space. And ideally, one day I would like to move on to a bit of acreage myself. But that's partly what stemmed this idea of trying to be more self-sufficient in an urban situation, because the reality is, for most of us, we can't just leave the city and move out to the country, even if we'd like to. We, for most of us,
it's just not an option.
Yeah, that's right. So it got me to thinking, don't put everything off for some time down the track, which may or may not come. Let's have a look at the situation that we're in and what most of my friends and family are in, and let's be realistic about what we can do there. And there's a lot more that you can do than you really think. With a little bit of effort, you can do quite a bit, and I think it can be really rewarding.
Yeah, I think too is that, and something that certainly I suffered from a bit was, I had this thought that, and I kind of lived in my dream world, and I watched things like Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall's River Cottage, and you actually put me onto that, and
great show.
Yeah, and I fell in love with the concept, and if anything, I started to get a little bit, I guess, depressed that I didn't have that, and I really yearned to have that lifestyle. And I fell into the trap of thinking, I'll be happy when I have that, I'll be happy if I had that, when really, that's a destructive path of thought. What I really needed to do, and what I have since discovered, didn't take me long, but I thought, I threw my hands up one day and went, I've just got to get out there into my own backyard, and I've got soil right there. Why aren't I just giving it a crack with what I have here, even though I'm surrounded by the Legoland suburban lifestyle? I was almost allowing that society's thought of what we have around us to dominate how I lived my life, when really this is the four corners of my property, what I do inside there, is up to me, and as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else. And, you know, if that makes me happy and I can get some connection with my food and, you know, dig around in the dirt and be more rewarding and potentially get some livestock in, it's going to generate a lot of happiness that I couldn't get simply by dropping everything I have and moving out to the country, which just isn't an option, as you said.
Yeah, no, you really nailed it there. I was along the same train of thought that I was forever thinking about when I have some acreage, when I move away, when I can take that step, you know, things will be great. And really, in the meantime, I had a reasonable size backyard, and you know, the situation was there. It just needed a little bit of thought and work to be put into it, and it can be quite rewarding and quite productive if it's done in the right way, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. And that raises a good point, is that you don't need acres and acres and acres of land to get something out of it. And that's essentially what this is all about. So, I mean, just to give a bit more history, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself? What's your situation, mate?
Well, I'm a plumber. I work for myself. We live in Brisbane. I've got a young family, a wife and two sons that my youngest bloke's just started going to school, and my other little ones will be turning two shortly. And we all sort of appreciate the outdoors, and we would love to one day move onto a bigger piece of land, but the reality is for us at the moment, the city's where we are, and it's probably where we'll be for the foreseeable future. And we sort of thought about, well, what can we do to make our life in the city more enjoyable and connect us more with our environment, and just taking a little bit of responsibility and getting a bit of joy from producing our own food to whatever level that becomes, you know. And I really wanted to do that with vegetables, and I also wanted to, I was really keen on getting some chickens in to get some fresh eggs.
Yeah, which you've done, so.
Yeah, which is what we ended up doing just recently. We went along and we built we picked a place in our yard where we thought would be suitable to have chickens, and it's actually quite achievable for most people with even a smallish backyard to have one or two birds.
Yep.
We've gone for six, and we've only had them for a couple of weeks now, but it's just been so rewarding for the whole family. You know, I just want to put it out there that
anyone can do it,
and it's so rewarding. It, you know, we're just getting so much out of it at the moment. It's good. Fantastic.
And that egg you gave me the other day, mate, was awesome.
Well, hopefully it's the first of many to come your way, but soon enough you'll be getting your own.
Yeah, well, that's right. You know, to let you all know, I have a slightly different situation. I'm currently in a temporary place at the moment. I just purchased a house. Settlement isn't for another 30 days, but really excited because that gives me a good clean slate to get out there. And I think it's going to be good for the listeners too to follow what I'm doing, because I'm going to be taking it from a normal ornamental type garden with no production whatsoever, and I'm going to be going through the process of converting parts of my yard into something more productive, and then as time goes by, continuing that to hopefully completely convert the yard into something that's resourceful. I've been fairly fortunate to pick up a house that has some very good self-sufficient elements to it already. There's a few things missing from what I consider core self-sufficiency articles in a household, but things like it already has a 5,000 gallon tank that's plumbed up to the house so we can live off the rainwater, which is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And one other thing which, you know, ticked a big box for me, something that most people don't think about initially but makes a lot of sense, and that's having grey water diversion.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of good water there that can be used for irrigating, and
absolutely.
It's literally going down the drain.
Exactly. So it I'm not 100% sure how big the tank is. Obviously it's it's big enough to fit into a small corner of the yard, but it's also got its own pump, and it's already wired up or plumbed up to taps that are positioned around the garden and already up to an irrigation system as it speaks. So
yeah, it's a fantastic
setup. The fact that it's already done for me is great. A couple of elements on the household that is missing that I would like to have there is solar for a start.
Yeah.
And then, as I said, the gardens are all ornamental except for a few. This one row of corn I noticed the other day. But it is in an ornamental garden and it looks as though it's been planted just for the looks of things. It's quite bizarre the way it's situated, but
sure,
it's definitely not really there for any productivity. But I was quite surprised to see it and quite glad to see at least one vegetable growing in the yard that I'm going to be able to go in there.
Yeah, that's a good one. Cool.
Yeah. And the cobs are just about ready for picking, so they better not pick them before I get in there. Now, with that, just to give you a bit of history about where I am, as Joel mentioned, he runs his own plumbing business, and that's a pretty big reason as to why you can't just drop everything in the city and move out to the country.
Indeed.
You know, you've worked hard to establish your business here, and then to drop that just to move out to the country would take some serious kahunas to take that step. Myself, I'm an account executive for a pretty large corporate business, one of the biggest companies in the world. I won't mention who they are. And whilst that seems conflicting with my ideals, it actually works well with my personality. But when I get home, I just want to switch off from the corporate lifestyle completely and get my hands in the dirt. And for me, it's a rediscovery of that humanistic sense of growing your own food, supporting yourself, rather than being tied up in the society's idea of perform some menial task, get some credit in my what you can't see inverted commas air quotes, and then using that to buy some food that's got so many food miles on it. You know, it's been produced in Uzbekistan or something and then shipped on a plane and then shipped on a ship and then put into the grocery store, and then we're eating, you know, kiwi fruit from across the ways, or we're eating potatoes from some other country or whatever.
Yeah, oranges from California. It's hard to comprehend, really, isn't it?
Exactly. And, you know, the fruits and vegetables are even picked well before they're ripe, and they're ripening on the way, and, you know,
or transported frozen or God knows what.
Yeah, so, you know, and the other day I had a fantastic realisation, or not so much a realisation, but a sense of worth. The other day I was sitting out, and I haven't told you this yet, but I made myself a salad, just with some greens and that we had. Sat out on the back patio, and I was doing some work, and I was eating the salad, and I realised I don't have much lettuce in this salad, and I could literally spin around to where my seedlings are, and I've got a couple of lettuce growing there, and I just ripped it straight off, not using any fertilizers or pesticides or herbicides or fungicides or anything like that. So I was comfortable just ripping it straight off the plant, popping it straight into the salad bowl and eating it.
So rewarding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what better way to disconnect from, as you were saying earlier, working in the city in a big high stress job. What better way to disconnect than to come home and, you know, get into the garden and just completely remove yourself from that situation and get back to grassroots and you know, it's good for the soul.
Yeah. Not only that, but it's actually good for you getting your hands in the dirt. I don't have it in my notes here, but I was listening to another podcast the other day, and I can't remember which one because I listen to so many, but the guy was talking about there's an actual chemical they found in the dirt which has an antidepressant-like effect on the body.
Wow.
So even just getting your hands in the dirt actually leads through what they found in science to actually have an antidepressant-type effect. So,
well, there you go.
Yeah, go and get your hands dirty. All right. So, Joel, you mentioned you got your chooks there. I want to have a chat about that because this is, I guess, probably the most staple livestock decision that anyone can make who want to move towards this lifestyle. Getting chooks, it's easy. They almost take care of themselves except for, you know, food and water and a few bits and pieces here. So for you, how did the decision come about to go and get chooks?
Well, I guess it came about originally because we enjoy eating eggs in our family, and And I was just continually disappointed with the eggs that I could buy at your local supermarket. Mm. And namely, the fact that they just were never fresh.
Yep.
And, you know, eggs in Australia in particular seem to... There's very loose rules around how long they can be around. And I got sick of cracking an egg into a frying pan and it just filling the pan. It just completely just ran like water. And you get a fresh egg.
No structure to it.
Yeah, and you crack a fresh egg and it just, it holds together. Like, you'd never need an egg ring with a fresh egg. Like, it literally just holds together. The yolk sits high. And that's what I craved. I craved having just nice fresh eggs where, you know, we knew where they'd come from. We knew what the birds had been eating. And we also knew that we could give them a reasonable lifestyle where they could have a yard to go around and be a chook and scratch and peck and not be in a battery cage where they can't even stand up.
Yeah, it's interesting too because what you say about the cracking the egg in and watching it run, you know, straight for the edges of the pan and not holding together, I actually find that with a lot of the organic free-range eggs as well.
Absolutely, yeah. We tried the free-range eggs. And thinking that, you know, that was the better way to go. And often they were worse. And I don't know if that's because there's not as high a turnover because they're more expensive or what the case was there. But, yeah.
So I see. Look, because there's a high percentage of people out there or a much higher percentage of people who just buy cage eggs, potentially the free-range organic eggs sit on the shelf longer and therefore the quality is degrading because they're sitting for longer. And then by the time the people who make the right decision for the chicken's well-being, the best decision they can make without getting their own chooks at home, by the time they grab them off the shelf, they're already aged and therefore they're degraded in quality. So
that's exactly right. And look, let's be honest, with marketing these days, who can be sure what free-range, in inverted commas, actually comes down to for the bird's welfare? Like, you know, we all know what a cage egg is and they have to state that on a box now and you know, that the conditions that they're laid in are pretty horrendous for the birds. Then there's barn laid.
Which is not much better.
Which is not much better, but I think people just think, oh, it doesn't say cage, it says barn, that must be nice. And then there is free range. Now, how free range that is and what numbers are to what square meterage, I'm not aware of. But I know that my birds at home are free range birds.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're doing what chickens are supposed to do. And, you know, you can just sit there and watch them for a while. It's really quite interesting. They're a simple creature, but they're endearing. And, you know, we really enjoy having them in the yard. The kids love them. My wife enjoys it. We keep all our veggie scraps. We take them up there every morning and every afternoon. You know, we just feed them a laying mash, which has got their staples in it for calcium and their proteins and whatnot. We make sure they have fresh water. But, you know, they just spend the day. From when we get up in the morning, we open up their little run, which is a sufficient size it is. They just kick around the yard. Yep. And it's, you know, it's great. It's great to see. And, look, the results are there in the eggs that we've got so far. It's only early days, but they've just been fantastic.
Yep. So as far as the space that you've chosen, when it comes to surveying the property, what factors did you have to consider?
Well, we live in southeast Queensland, so as you well know, it gets really hot.
Mm-hmm.
So I considered shade a fairly big consideration.
Absolutely, yeah.
And look, we had a great spot for our chooks up the back of our yard, and we've got quite a established Queensland nut tree, a macadamia nut tree, and it has a pretty decent canopy, so it throws really decent shade at the back of our place. So we decided that that'd be the best place for us, and we fenced off. I suppose it'd be about 15 square metres, maybe 20, 15, 20 square metres.
A bit close to 20, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd say probably is close to 20 square metres. Because we could afford to have that space for them. Yep. They don't necessarily need that much space. And look, as I said, they're only contained in that when overnight, essentially. And then we open it up through the day because that. Our situation allows that, but we've fenced off that sort of area. We built a coop. You and I knocked a coop up the other weekend, just some standard building materials.
Yeah, well, you knocked it up and I took photos.
Yeah, well, and look, you know, there's a whole a whole range of designs out there that can suit different yards and different numbers of birds.
Tell the people what sort of coop you ended up going with and why. What were the reasons we went with that particular coop?
Well, my wife's mum, they've got some really lovely neighbours that had chooks before I'd got them. And Ray's a pretty handy bloke, and he knocked together his coop. And I went over and sort of had a yarn with him, and he went through a lot of designs on the internet and basically adapted one that suited their situation. Yep. And I thought there was a lot of merit to his design, so I basically used what he had done. It's slightly different, but the principles are the same, and that is that it's a square coop, which is all fenced off, all meshed off with snake mesh.
Yep.
And then it's got a little platform with a ladder going from that platform up to an elevated box where they sleep.
Yep.
And there's a couple of laying boxes in there, and then it's got a hatch on the back that we can open up for easy access for cleaning and for retrieving eggs.
Yeah. So it's about 1.8 high, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yeah, about 1,800 high.
Yep.
And I think we just went with 1,200 wide and deep.
Yep.
And then the laying box is about, it's probably about
1.2 off the ground.
Yeah, about 1,200 off the ground, I'd say. Yeah, and then it takes up about half the space at the front.
Yeah.
And look, I'm probably going to adapt the coop a little bit further to make it a bit easier for because the hatch I've designed on the back's a bit too heavy to open for the kids.
Yeah.
So, and I'm probably going to put a few more laying boxes in. But look, it is adequate. They're more than happy there.
Yep.
But it's just a few things that we're going to probably do differently, which we'll do when we knock yours together.
Yeah.
In the coming weeks.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Just now, obviously, I'm going to build mine actually to pretty much the same spec that you did, because fantastic design. It's nice and big. It's easy to get to the eggs at the back. It's not high. It's not low. You're not having to bend your back to get into to grab the eggs every morning. Easy to clean out because you're not. You know, you can just put something down on the ground and just sweep all the muck out. So with that in mind, remind me how much wood did we end up using?
It was
just in the framework.
It was about 36 lineal meters, I think.
So it's quite a bit of wood.
Yeah, it was quite a bit of wood. Look, I'm renowned for over engineering things. I can't help it. So it's probably a lot heavier duty than it needs to be.
Yep.
But yeah, I think that's what the end result was.
But it's going to last, I think.
Yeah, well, I think so, you know.
Yep.
It's
and the fencing material, now we made it 1200 deep and 1200 wide to make it easy, because the fencing material was 1200 wide.
Yeah, that's correct. We bought a 1200 mil wide roll of the snake mesh, so yeah, we just basically tailored around that for ease of install.
Yeah. Now the snake mesh had square holes.
Yeah. 6 mil square.
6 mil square holes.
Yeah.
I actually hear that the round ones, snakes can still squeeze through, and that's why they make it square.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, look, 6 mils is quite fine mesh. And my brother-in-law had used some at his place for some fencing, and I thought that's where I'd first seen it, and I thought, wow, that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Your traditional chicken wire can be anything from 15 to 25 mil, and then some of the bigger bird mesh is up to 50 mil, where, you know, on the smaller stuff, when we're talking 15 to 25 mil, certain snakes would get through there. They're probably not big enough to worry the birds, but anything bigger than that, you know, if you get a good-sized carpet snake in there, then, you know, at the bare minimum, it'll start pinching eggs, and if you get a really decent one in there, then it might help itself to a bird or two.
Yeah, it'll be able to get in, but might not be able to get out.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you've used the same material for the mesh on the coop itself, but then you also use that as the fencing material?
Yeah, well, I bought a 50-metre roll of mesh, so I had it on hand there, and I just essentially knocked in some star pickets and then just used that for the perimeter fence, and for the same reason that it keeps birds and things out, and snakes.
Yep.
And I had it on hand. It sort of worked well to just buy the one material that would double as the fencing material and for making the cage.
Make it easy. Yep. Absolutely. So what type of chooks did you end up getting?
Look, I went with the Isa Browns. There's a lot of different options out there when you're buying laying hens. Some people go for a dual-purpose bird that they can use for egg production as well as meat.
Mm-hmm.
I've just gone straight out for a laying bird. The Isa Browns are renowned in this part of the world for probably being the most prolific egg layer.
Yep.
And that's what we were after. So that's what I went with. There's Rhode Island Reds and black hens and there's a whole heap to choose from there, and look, possibly down the track we might look at some other ones, but so far with the Isa Browns, they've just been fantastic.
Mm.
We bought them at point of lay, so not all of them are laying yet. You can tell actually from the colours of the birds that some are more mature than others.
Mm-hmm.
But we started out when we first got them. We were lucky enough on the first day that we got two eggs.
Yeah.
I think that it was all
there was one in the box by the time we got them home.
That's right. I think it was all a bit of a hectic, stressful day for them that day. But once they settled in, we were sort of getting one, sometimes two eggs a day.
Mm.
And then within a number of days we've had up to five eggs in a day so far, but we're averaging four at the moment.
Yep.
And it shouldn't be long before we're getting essentially an egg a day.
Yep.
They say they lay between 300 and 350 a year per bird once yep. they're in the swing of things. And from people I know that have got them, they're almost guaranteed to give you an egg a day.
When you say egg a day, you mean an egg per bird per day, so up to six eggs per day.
Yeah, that's right.
That's awesome.
And look, that might seem a lot for one family, but the reality is when you've got these beautiful fresh eggs, there's always friends and family.
A lot more tempting to eat them anyway.
That's right, a lot more tempting to eat them. That's right, they're super enjoyable. And it's a really nice thing that if you're going to a barbie or something like that, you can have some nice fresh eggs in the salad, or you can take them along, or you can just give some away to your friends and family, and you know, everyone loves them.
Yep.
You've got to be careful you don't give too many away, because everyone's coming back with their hand out.
Yeah. That you know, that reminds me of an episode of The Good Life, which is another show that inspired me, quite funny, and the character in that, Tom Good, had an arrangement where he'd go down to the local newsagent and he'd hand over a few eggs for the latest copy of some farming magazine. And you know, there's a few magazines that I buy, I think I might have to make it my personal ambition in life to be able to meet up with my local news agency and see if I can swindle them half a dozen eggs for a magazine.
Yeah, well, I think once they taste the produce, they'll be thinking they're getting the good deal out of that one, because they really are fantastic. And and just on a side note, if you're into having poached eggs, which I never used to eat much at all, because with those eggs that weren't fresh from the supermarket, you'd crack it into the pan and it would just disperse and you'd end up with nothing.
Yeah.
With a fresh egg, you can crack that into the water and it just holds together. It almost comes out in the shape of a boiled egg. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And since having the hens in the yard and these fresh eggs, we've really enjoyed having a few poached eggs. Mm. And it's just been great.
That's funny you say that, because, as you know, my brother's a chef. And he has two types of eggs that they order in, and one of them is for all your general stuff, and one of them is for the ones that require good presentation. They get them from an organic farm, which is a lot more expensive, and he uses those eggs for poaching and things like that, for their Eggs Benedict and all that sort of stuff, where you just need a good, solid poached egg. So
yeah, that's right. You know, it really holds together.
Yeah. So now, there's obviously a lot of places you can get the birds from, and I know that you and I did a lot of research onto where we were going to get the birds, and what we found was originally we were going to go to our local produce store, which is a little bit further out of town, but then we made an interesting discovery.
Yeah, well, I just did a little bit of quick research on the internet, the fantastic tool that it is, and yeah, we found that just not even 5 minutes from my place, there was a local hatchery that focuses just on poultry.
Yep.
And they had an incredible range, and it was just like an omen, I think. Really, we just sort of started. They had an incredible range there. It was really well priced, and it was less than 5 minutes from home. Yep. And that's just what they do. And we went and had a look, and we're blown away, really, with the yeah. selection and
being so close.
Being so close. And, look, the birds were under really good conditions there, and mm-hmm. they seemed really happy. And we got them home, and within a day they were just really calm and happy to yep. be there. That it was, yeah, it was a really good result.
And the kids just took to them straight away, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, one of the boys, was a little bit antsy at first, but how's he doing now?
Yeah, no, they both just love it now. They that's part of the daily routine now. Morning and afternoon, they check. You know, we let the chooks out first thing in the morning.
Yep.
And it's always exciting how many eggs have we got today, and yep. and the. You know, they take it in turns one day after the next to who gets to take the scrap bucket up and, yep. and empty it out for the chooks. And, it's great fun and, it's just really rewarding. There's just no negatives attached with it at all. It's hardly any work and, it's just the benefits there. Yep. It wasn't a huge cost as an outlay and, look, they're just great fun to have around.
The benefits far outweigh any negative, if any.
That's right.
Just another thing, mate, too, you've been taking the scraps out to them. Is there anything they don't eat?
Look, yeah, I I'm no expert. I'm still learning, but I basically only putting in things that I think they will eat. I wouldn't put onion skins in.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't put citrus or anything like that. But, look, any peelings of carrots or potatoes or any salad, we eat a lot of salads, anything that comes off, you know, your salads other than onion and that sort of thing we put in. Any fruit, we've had some watermelon lately, and we just, even the green bit at the bottom that you put in, it's still got a bit of the pink watermelon on it, we just chuck that in there. If they don't like it, they just peck away at what they do like. If they're not interested in it, just leaves it. And because they continually scratch up the area, they're essentially turning compost into the ground. So it's, it's a great system. I haven't fed the birds any meat or any meat derivatives. Some people do that. I'm inclined not to do that at this stage. I don't think that they need it. Look,
I found a few grubs on my snow peas this afternoon that I could have easily chucked into the chook pen.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, grubs and that sort of thing, that's fair game, and that's what that is, their natural fodder. And doing a little bit in a small veggie patch weeding out the other day, I found a couple of big lawn grubs, and the chooks were nearby, so we slung them their way, and they made short work of them.
As they do. Now, speaking of the garden, we won't go too much onto this because I think you've only just sort of moved over there, but you had a small raised bed around the side, and from what I thought I heard you say the other day, that you've gotten back in over there to sort it out.
Yeah, look, it was just overrun with weeds because it had no attention for some time, but we quickly weeded it out, and we had a little bit of parsley growing in there. We've put basil in one, just some little seedlings.
Yep.
And I've also planted a jalapeno chili bush.
Nice.
And it's one thing that I've learned, actually, having the chooks out and about, is that they love getting into that garden and scratching around. So that's one thing that's come to my attention, that I'll have to put a little bit of that spare mesh that I've got to just fence it off, because it can be quite devastating when you just nurture something and get it going to a point where you think it's going to be productive, and then you come outside and there's a hen standing on top of it pecking at the roots. So yeah, that's the little...
It's worse when it's someone on your own team.
Yeah, so that's as far as we've got. The garden's still to come. The chooks was the first goal that we needed to kick at our place, and we've done that now. So the next step's gardening. But speaking of which, I think you can shed a bit more light on that. You've been doing a bit... Your place, tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, as I said before, I'm in a temporary situation at the moment, so there's not a lot I can really do. But again, that didn't stop me from getting out there and doing a few things.
Not at all. You've done heaps, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot, and I think this proves the theory around the urban farming lifestyle. I actually had one bed to work with, and that was about, it must be about 1.5 deep. And probably about 6 metres in length.
Yeah, that's being pretty generous. I'd say it's flat out being six.
So I really didn't have much there. And knowing that I was looking at buying a house, I want to be as productive as I can when I get straight in there, I thought the best approach with this garden was to try out a number of crops.
Oh, yeah, that is a good idea.
Yeah, and see what's working well at the moment, and I think more importantly, see what I'm good at growing and what troubles I come up with.
Sure.
Now, in addition to that bed, I also had a couple of small containers, portable containers, that I've just been growing some things in as well.
Yeah, which you can get some really good results of.
Yeah, radishes in particular have been doing really well in those. My tomatoes have had some issues, which I'll talk about, but... to give you an idea, the small bed, I grew a vast variety of different crops, and that they include snow peas, sugar snap peas, Tried some spring onions, a couple of types of carrots, some beetroot, lettuce. I had tomatoes in a separate container, like I was talking about. I've done some interesting things with potatoes, growing them in a bag.
Yeah, when you're finished, we'll have to get into that a bit more. That is very interesting.
Yep. Radishes, which are doing exceptionally well. I've tried leeks and zucchini, which didn't do too well in a strange kind of way, which we'll have a chat about.
Yeah, right.
So, first of all, the radishes were really easy, and, you know, they're resilient plants, they're quick to sprout, they're quick to grow, quick to harvest. If anyone out there want to try, you know, this at all, I would say start with radish. Even if you don't like it, there's going to be someone who does like it, but it'll get you enthused because it's fast and easy and resilient. And it just inspires you to crack on because you're getting results so quickly.
Definitely.
And for impatient people like me, it's a good starter crop.
Well, I think we're all a little bit impatient in some ways, and if you can put something in the ground and it comes good in a reasonably short amount of time, it is inspiring, and it does spur you on to try other things that might be a bit slower, but it plants the seed, exactly. Excuse the pun, but, you know, within yourself to get out there and have a go.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's not the only thing that's been doing quite well for me. Snow peas did quite well as well. Now, I only planted 3 plants just, you know, to see how they went, and I constructed a bamboo teepee with some string, some garden string going up that they've attached themselves and grown right up. And they've been going so well, you know, for what they are. I actually, now that I know that I'm moving, rather than continue to harvest, and as you know, we would just go out there and start picking off it and eating them as a snack in the garden.
Yeah, they were exceptional. That's inspired me to get some of those in the ground at my place.
Yeah, and to do it properly. Just this evening before you came around, actually, I went out there and I'd been leaving them on the plant for some time.
Okay.
To develop the pods quite extensively so that I could pick them off and try my hand at seed saving. So,
oh, great.
Hopefully, yeah, I'll be able to utilise those in the new house.
We'll be interested to hear how that goes.
Yeah. Now, also, my carrots are doing quite well, which you've seen. They're growing quite well indeed. Still a long way to go before they're ready for harvest.
Yeah, they're a bit slower to come good, the old carrots.
Yeah, that's right. And I did pull some out just to see, because my curiosity just was burning up and I just wanted to see if they'd developed and see how they were going. And I pulled a few up and there was a few curly that had gotten stumped.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were the first ones to come up, and then I sort of cracked and thought, oh, I'm just going to rip them all up. And then it just, luckily, the next one I pulled up was straight. Was developing nicely, and I went, okay, no, I'm going to leave them in there and then wait till they develop and mature.
And even though that one was quite small, it still, you were saying, had incredible flavour.
Yeah, absolutely. It was literally a 2-biter, but those 2 bites were pretty sweet. So
good stuff.
The beetroots are going really well. The lettuce, I've had mixed results with the lettuce, but you know, they've been growing quite well. They're doing really well in a styrofoam box that I've been growing them in at the moment.
Okay.
So I think that just comes down to the fact that the bed had quite a lot of sun and they were struggling in the sun.
Yeah, our Queensland sun here is pretty formidable in the peak of summer.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I've got a few out there and I've constructed a bit of shade cloth over it at the moment just to see how they go. Some of them did really well and I've actually let them go to bolt as well.
Okay.
So a lot of the plants that are in there now, I'm letting them bolt to go to seed so that I can try my hand at seed saving. And this is, as I said, it's a test bed. So I've grown a few things. I'm enjoying some things, but I'm allowing a lot to go to seed just so I can sort of almost do a test run on everything before I move to the new place.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Now, one thing that was really quite terrible, and I'm absolutely bewildered as to why, was the sugar snap peas, because they were literally a foot away from my snow peas, but they grew to about 6 inches in height, and then they just shriveled up and they stunted in growth and just wouldn't grow, and you know, no amount of water and manure could help them, and they just didn't. They just struggled.
Yeah, that is disappointing. You'd think that they're a fairly similar plant to the snow pea, that you'd get a fairly similar result.
Yeah, yeah. So one of them was about 30 centimetres away, and the other one was planted a little bit further away, about another 2 feet from them. And yeah, they just didn't do very well at all. But the most unusual thing that happened to me was the zucchini. Now, I put two zucchini plants in there. I probably should have just put the one because of how close they were together. But originally I put two in because I was frightened that, you know, at least one, if one didn't make it, I'd have another one there that I could keep going. But as it turned out, they grew to be really healthy plants.
Yeah, they established themselves quite nicely there. They looked incredible.
Yeah, and that is the biggest shame because even though they were really healthy plants, I didn't have enough bee activity in the yard to pollinate them.
Yeah, this is something that I found really interesting and devastating for you at the same time, is that you had such a healthy-looking plant there. It was flowering. It looked. Yep. It had all the potential to just start producing good volumes of fruit. Mm. And then, yeah, you found out that it wasn't getting pollinated.
It wasn't being pollinated. It wasn't
producing anything.
Yeah, so with the zucchini, they develop male flowers first, and then shortly after that, the female flowers start getting developed, and then they cross-pollinate the male to the female flower through bee activity, most commonly. Now, there's a couple of ways around that if you don't have the bees there. One is to take the male flower and actually insert the pollen yourself using the male flower, or take a soft, small paintbrush and transport it from the male flower to the female flower.
Right.
That's a lot of work.
Definitely.
And in my eyes, it's not a natural process. So I'd rather come up with a natural way of solving the problem, and that is to attract the bees to the area.
Yeah.
Now, given the fact that this is a temporary location, as I've so commonly mentioned, it wasn't something that I could really look forward to doing and look to do in this current time frame. But I would look at getting plants in there, like sunflowers and stuff like that, which are going to attract the bees there.
Sure.
You can even build a native bee box to have in the yard, and that keep, you know, give them somewhere that they can nest in the yard.
Yeah, right.
And things like that, and actually get the bees there. You know, and that is my preferred approach. So if I run into this problem at my new place, that is exactly what I'm going to do. In fact, I will be planting some flowers and things like that do attract the bees.
Yeah.
Just because they're fantastic to have in the garden. So with that in mind, the fact that I couldn't do that in my current situation, I just took the trusty old pocket knife out and cut them off at the base and dragged them out.
Yeah.
Which was a pretty hard thing to do because of how healthy the plants were, but really, you know, this is a test bed and it just had to be done, so...
Sure.
Interestingly enough, though, I cut them out and I dragged them down back behind the shed where we've got a bit of a compost heap going, and I just healed some sandy soil out and dumped the stem that had been chopped. I didn't even take the root ball with me, and I thought I'll at least just bury the stem of the plant and just let them decay on their own there. And I hadn't looked at them for about 2 weeks until someone pointed out to me today that a lot of the foliage has died off, but the core part of the plant is still growing.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
Behind the shed, so.
Yeah, look, I agree with what you were saying earlier too. I think having the bees do the work is the natural course of things. And you know, I think that's the right move. When the situation allows it, you try and encourage the bee activity in your yard and nature takes its course and you reap the benefits of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when I get into this new place, March 30, that's exactly what I'll be doing.
Yeah, so you've mentioned that you're getting into this place in March. So let's hear about what are some of the plans that you've got in store for the new joint.
Well, without actually living there just yet, it's hard to really plan too much, obviously, but I have started to gear my mind around what sort of activity I am going to do there. Now, one part of the yard in particular that I have focused some thought towards is an area that had a really significant size jungle gym for the kids.
Oh, yes.
Now, part of the contract was that they actually wanted to take that jungle gym.
Was that hard for you?
Not hard at all. Because it actually freed up quite a lot of space.
Sure.
Now, without being there and being able to do soil samples and stuff like that, and to really gauge the path of the sun, there's quite a lot of trees around that area. Obviously, they picked it because it's shady. You know, it might not make the best spot for gardens or for a lot of vegetable production. But it is an ideal space for raised garden beds. So in my mind, I've got to prepare for the thought of, well, do I cut some of the foliage down, which are large shrubs that are around the perimeter of the house, which shade the area? Do I cut those down to expose more light to the area and build the garden beds there? And the fact that it's already garden barked, which is essentially the ground that the kids' playground was on, it's almost like there's already going to be paths there. I'll just cut it out, build the beds and fill with topsoil and go from there.
Yeah, okay.
But I need to do a soil test to see what kind of soil it is and what kind of drainage and all that sort of stuff is there.
Yeah.
Or alternatively with the area, I could just leave it exactly as is, fence it off and chuck some chickens in there.
Well, yeah, we were mentioning that earlier, that shade's a bit of a must for
exactly,
chooks.
Exactly,
exactly. You know,
so given that, it's probably going to be the easier option because it has already got fence that I can pretty much lay the 6mm snake mesh up that like you've done yourself.
Yeah.
So I don't need to star pick it or anything like that. And
oh, that's
good. You know, I just need to do it on two sides basically because two sides already have the fence in area. So I think, you know, in realistic terms, it's probably going to be what I will do with the area. It's quite a significant area, so I could actually even potentially look at doing splitting it down the middle and having a number of chooks in one side and a couple of pigs in the other.
Yeah, pigs, okay. That's something that I'm quite keen to do as well, but still looking into the regulations there. Have we found out any information on that yet?
Yeah, well, I jumped onto the Brisbane City Council Facebook page, actually, because I couldn't find anything on the council website. But I jumped over to the Facebook and I posted a comment there asking about providing me with a link that informed me about regulations about holding livestock in a residential area. And I included some examples such as poultry and pigs. Now, within a couple of hours, and this was at night, which I was quite surprised at how efficient they were at you know, getting back to me, which
that is a surprise. Let's duly noted.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really took me by surprise. Not only that, but you know, they did provide a link straight away. Now, unfortunately, they provided a link to the poultry regulations, which I had found on the Brisbane City Council website.
Yeah.
So even though, yes, they were very helpful in providing a link and quick to get back to me, they actually didn't provide me with any information on the pigs, which was what I was more interested in. It was my fault that I wasn't more specific. However, given that quick response, I immediately jumped on and posted a response to their response, and that was, can you please specify the restrictions on keeping pigs in a residential area? Now, they didn't get back to me that night, but they did get back to me the immediate day after,
yep.
Which, again, you know, was quite good of them to do that. They didn't provide a link that had any regulations or anything like that, but they did say that there's no restrictions on keeping pigs.
Wow, there you go.
In a residential area. They did say that there is some regulations or guidelines around things like noise, hygiene and the welfare of the animal itself. Now, given that there was some guidelines based around that, I felt that it would be a valuable resource, and I asked them to post that link, but I haven't actually had a response from them since then.
Okay.
So I would say that perhaps the person who's moderating the Facebook site has had to go somewhere else to try and find those regulations because they're not potentially available on the BCC website. I don't know. But I did find a really good link, which I'll put in our show notes, that was put out by the CSIRO. I'll say that again, the CSIRO, on the welfare and management of pigs.
Okay, great.
Which is a fairly lengthy document, but a lot of good information in there. And they also had one on poultry, which I saved as well. So I'll provide those links, valuable sources of info.
Oh, great. And the link from the Brisbane City Council on the poultry is quite a good one too, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And this brings me to another interesting point that some people may not know, that you don't need roosters in with your chooks to get eggs. The hens will lay eggs anyway.
Yep.
They don't need a rooster there. You can't have a rooster in a
residential
premises.
Mm.
But you can have, depending on the size of your block of land, you can have certain numbers of birds. I can't remember the figures off the top of my head.
It's up to 6 birds in a property that is 800 square metres or less.
Yep.
If you have a property in what's deemed as residential that is larger than 800 square metres, you can have up to 20 birds, I believe. 20 or 22.
Yeah, well, that sort of covers most bases for people between those numbers. And, you know, 6 birds on less than 800 square metres is still a really good amount. It's going to produce a good amount of eggs at home or meat birds, if that's what you're after, or a combination of both. And then if you've got over the 800 squares, then 20 birds, you really, you know...
Yeah.
The possibilities are endless there, so...
Yeah, that's right. I mean, 20 birds, you know, that's a pretty big haul. But, you know, it's doable, and just goes to show you that they really don't need a lot of space.
No, that's right. That's right. And really, from having the 6 that I've got at the moment, I can't imagine that it's not much different. You'll be producing... supplying them a bit more water and feed, but other than that, once the housing's built and the fencing's there...
Once the infrastructure's there, it's done.
Yeah, they just do their thing.
So I've got to ask you, you've got laying hens, but once they reach the end of their cycle, or they're getting a bit of age onto them and they're not producing any eggs, are they a bird that you can take to the kitchen?
Well, look, they're not renowned for being a table bird, but waste not, want not, and by the same token, no one rides for free. So, the birds, it might seem a little bit harsh, but they'll have a really good life at our place while they're productive and
a better laying, life than most birds.
Yeah, and laying their eggs, and when it comes time that part of their
existence is over.
Then is really over. Yeah. Then they'll go to a secondary use, and that will be in the kitchen. Now, they might not be ideal as a bird to roast up, but I'm sure that that the meat will still be good, and we'll use it in some curries or casseroles, and also use the remainder for some good homemade stock. So, that's one of the fantastic things about a chicken is that they're so easy to keep, they're fun to have around, and their eggs are just out of this world when they're fresh, and at the end of it, they're delicious in their own right.
They're just such a giving animal, aren't they? All right, well, that brings us near to the end of the show. We're going to leave with a few handy tips, and seeing as I've been working on the garden, I'm going to give a pretty handy tip around gardening. And this comes down to something that I'm going to have to do when I move into this place, as I mentioned, and that's a soil test. So, you know, falling short of going out there and just digging a little bit of soil and inspecting it visually, there's a really cool trick that has been around for such a long time that it's proven the test of time, and that's the jar test. So what the idea is that you get a jar, just your sauce jar or jam jar, and go out and take a sample of the soil. And you fill the jar up to probably around about a quarter full with the soil. Then, for, say, the remaining 3/4, fill with water. All right? Then you vigorously shake it up, so it's loosening all of the material up, and it's separating the organic material from sands and clay and silt and everything, and it's basically mixing it all up into the water, and then you pop it down on the shelf somewhere and let it sit for a day. And what that does is it actually settles all the material,
In different layers, does it?
In absolutely different layers, because they're all different weights. So the heavier stuff, like your sand and your grit, will sink to the bottom, so your gravel and coarse sand. So that'll be your first layer. The second layer is gritty material that's not quite as heavy as gravel and coarse sand. And then above that, you've got the clay layer, right? Then you'll have the majority of the water, and then actually floating on top is the organic material.
Okay.
Yeah. So the idea is that these layers then give you an idea of the breakup of the soil based on those elements. So obviously, if you've got of those layers at the bottom there, three quarters of it is coarse sand and gravel, and then you've got a little bit of clay and a little bit of silty material, then you've got really sandy soil.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the same works in reverse. If you've got, you know, minimal coarse sand and gravel, but you've got a really big layer, or the majority of the layer is clay, then you can safely say you've got clay soil.
Sure. And there's different things that you can do depending on what soil you've got to improve it or add something that it's lacking and that sort of thing, isn't there?
Yep. So obviously things like composting or animal manures and stuff like that, which you can turn through the soil to improve its quality and get it more to that desirable loam type texture where you've got a good mix of all the materials.
Yeah.
You know, that's ideal. And that, you know, getting all that compost in is something we can do. I know that when you've got chooks, some of the traditionally composting materials from the kitchen go to the chooks, but everything in the yard that you cut back, or things like your bean pods and stuff like that, when you're shelling peas, you know, all that stuff can go in. Eggshells, great to go in as well. Spent coffee, also really good for going into the compost and stuff like that.
Yeah, okay.
And of course, animal manure. So you might be taking some of that compost from the kitchen and giving it to the chooks, but the chooks are then going to be giving you animal manure. And that brings us on to your handy tip.
Yeah, well, a handy tip that I've had is in our chicken coop, we've decided to line it with sugarcane mulch is what we're using at the moment. It's readily available at hardware stores, garden centres and landscaping supplies. You can buy it in a handy little bale that you could easily put in a small car.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've just been pulling that out and using that as a bit of a base on the bottom of the chicken coop where the yep. birds sleep and nest. And that serves two purposes. It gives them something comfortable rather than just timber to be on.
Mm-hmm.
And it also
some insulation
and some comfort them to nest in. They sort of, you know, make their own nest, but they also obviously go to the toilet on there, and the chicken manure, then it's an easy way for us to scrape that mulch out, that sugarcane mulch out, and it's all then riddled with the chicken manure. We put fresh stuff in, and then what better thing to mulch your garden with? Sugarcane mulch in its own right is an excellent thing to put yep. on the garden, but then it's got the added bonus of having the chicken manure mixed through it, and it's a double hit there, really. You can mulch the garden and also fertilise it all in well. The one thing, and it's just no waste, and it's beneficial to the birds and to the garden and to us. So, yeah, that's my handy little hint is sugarcane mulch or straw or whatever you happen to be using. Line your coop with that. You can regularly change it so the birds are in a good, clean environment, and you're getting the added bonus of being able to mulch with that with the fertiliser built into your mulch.
All right, well, this brings us to the end of our audio diary. I hope you enjoyed listening and continue to follow us on our journey. Be sure to subscribe, and if you have any questions or advice you'd like to share with the show, feel free to send us an email at info@theurbanfarmers.tv, and we'll do our best to get your questions answered or share your knowledge with our listeners next time. Take it easy and go get your hands dirty.